Jagarha began to condemn. Sa she Amashavipanya indistinct through anger. Gira with words. Shivadvasham, the enemy of Lord Shiva. Dumapata in sacrifices. Shama by troubles. Smayam, very proud. Svatejasa by her order. Bhuta Ganan, the ghosts. Samuttitan, ready to injure Daksha. Negriha, stopped. Devi, Sati. Jagataha, in the presence of all. Abhishrinvataha, being heard. Translation, the followers of Lord Shiva, the ghosts, were ready to injure or kill Daksha, but Sati stopped them by her order. She was very angry and sorrowful, and in that mood she began to condemn the process of sacrificial fruit of activities and persons who were very proud of such unnecessary and troublesome sacrifices. She especially condemned her father, speaking against him in the presence of all. She can repeat. The followers of Lord Shiva the ghosts were ready to injure or kill Daksha. But Sati stopped them by her order. She was very angry and sorrowful. And in that mood, she began to condemn the process of sacrificial fruit of activities. And persons who are very proud of such unnecessary and troublesome sacrifices. She especially condemned her father, speaking against him in the presence of all. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The process of offering sacrifices is especially meant to satisfy Vishnu, who is called Yagyesha, because he is the enjoyer of the fruits of all sacrifice. And Bhagavad Gita, in the 5th chapter, text 29, also confirms this fact. The Lord says, Bhoktaram Jagya Tapasam. He is the actual beneficiary of all sacrifices. Not knowing this fact, less intelligent men offer sacrifices for some material benefit. To derive personal material benefits for sense gratification is the reason persons like Daksha and his followers perform sacrifices. Such sacrifices are condemned here as a labor of love without actual profit. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. One may prosecute the Vedic injunctions of offering sacrifices and other fruit of activities, but if by such activities one does not develop attraction for Vishnu, they are useless labors. One who has developed love for Vishnu must develop love and respect for Vishnu's devotees. Lord Shiva is considered the foremost personality amongst the Vaishnavas. Vaishnavanam yatha shambhu. Thus, when Sati saw that her father was performing great sacrifices but had no respect for the greatest devotee, Lord Shiva, she was very angry. This is fitting. When Vishnu or a Vaishnava is insulted, one should be angry. Lord Chaitanya, who always preached nonviolence, meekness, and humility, also became angry when Nityananda was offended by Jagai and Madai, and he wanted to kill them. When Vishnu or a Vaishnava is blasphemed or dishonored, one should be very angry. Narottama Das Thakur says, Krodha Bhakti Dveshi Jane. We have anger, and that anger can be a great quality when directed against a person who is envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee. One should not be tolerant when a person is offensive towards Vishnu or a Vaishnava. The anger of Sati towards her father was not objectionable, For although he was her father, he was trying to insult the greatest Vaishnava. Thus, Sati's anger against her father was quite applaudable. Jagahar samarsha vipandaya gyura shivadvasham duma patashama smayam swatejasa bhutaganhan samuttitan nigriya devi jagato vishrin pataha. And so Om Ganat Tumiranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this whole topic of fruitive activities is quite interesting, because these fruitive activities are prescribed, not proscribed. There's a difference between the word. We got a little English lesson here. Prescribed means prescription, you know, like you get drug, the drug doctor says you should take this prescription. That means they're advocated. And proscribed means exactly the opposite. You're not supposed to do it. So those of you who want to speak English, if you're from the South, be careful about saying prescribed, proscribed, or something like that, because it's a different word. Anyway, just a hint for you. So it's interesting, these Vedic injunctions are prescribed. The Vedas actually have three different parts, as Srila Prabhupada would often say: karma kanda, jnana kanda, upasana kanda. Okay? The karma kanda is what's being described here. Jnana kanda means knowledge section. We'll describe what that is. Upasana means the worship section. So upa means to bring yourself closer. Okay? Upasana, the practice. So the Karmakanda section, that's generally the four original Vedas, where you have the sacrifices. The Jnanakanda section, that's generally the Brahminical literature, is especially the Upanishads and stuff like that. And the Upasanakanda is the Puranas and the Pancharatra, like Narada Pancharatra and other literatures that teach you how to worship. You understand? Okay. So the original four Vedas, mainly they're teaching you how to worship the demigods. And the main demigod, it's interesting, the main demigod in the four original Vedas is who? Does anyone know? Indra. And you can see in the Western culture, or lack of culture, Western lack of culture, like if you go to the Greek culture, for example, the main demigod is who? Zeus, who's the same as Indra. And he has many similar characteristics. Like, you know, he gets angry, has thunderbolts, and he gets really romantic sometimes. And Indra is very romantic. We won't tell stories about how he has many eyes because he's romantic. But that's another story. So most of the hymns in the original four Vedas, they're to Indra, to worship Indra. Because, you know, he is the administrator. Generally, if you're going to bribe someone, you bribe the administrator. You don't bribe the president of the United States, unless you're really, like, elevated. But anyway, of course, in America, you don't bribe. In India, you bribe the person on the lower on the totem pole rather than the higher person on the totem pole. It's less money, too. I mean, Krishna needs a big bribe if you want to win him over, which is sarvadharmam purishaja mame kamshana. You got to give him everything. You know, that's a pretty big bribe. Whereas Indra, you just, you know, offer some puja there, you know. And the demigods, it's interesting, are dependent upon human bribes. Just like in India, people make very little salaries. You know, so they're dependent upon the bribe. The police are dependent on the bribes. They can't support their family just on their salary. Many third world countries, it's like that. It's understood that by getting bribes, they're able to support the family. Even in the South, the United States, it used to be like that. I don't know if it's still like that. Just like when we were very young, we were on our way to Florida from New York with our father. And I was in the back of the... I remember it very clearly somehow or other. I was in the back of the station wagon sleeping. And then all of a sudden we stopped in the middle of the South, the United States. And there were flashing lights and everything like that. And... the police had pulled them over because they have all these speed traps. You heard of speed traps? You know, small towns, still it's like that. They have quotas. They have to, especially around the end of the month, be careful when you're driving, because that's when they have to fulfill their quotas. You know, they haven't made their quota yet. So anyway, so the guy pulled him over, and speeding. I don't know how fast he was going. I woke up and I looked at him and said, "Where's Daddy? Daddy's in the police car." And so he was negotiating. Daddy was negotiating with them as to how much they would want. You know, obviously they held court in the police car. There was a judge, justice, you know, the lawyer, everybody in the police car. You know, anyway, one person. But and so they used to be like that in the United States. I don't know if it still works like that. But so that's the worship of the demigods generally. And if they don't get what they want, they get angry. They're very much interested in fruit. The demigods are very much interested in fruit of gain, position, prestige, just like that story where, you know, of course, Indra, he gets to be Indra because he's performed in the earth planet 100 horse sacrifices. I mean, don't ask me what a horse sacrifice is. Anyway, you can understand what it is. So anyway, he performed 100 horse sacrifices. So when he catches someone who's getting close to 100 horse sacrifices on the earth planet, he interferes with them. Not only 100 horse sacrifices, but anyone who's performing austerities, he sends agents of Cupid down. Just like we told the story on Sunday about Viswamitra Muni. Viswamitra Muni was meditating, you know, doing his best to try to become a Brahmarishi. And Indra tried to interfere with him 2 times and was successful both times. One time he sent down Menaka. And Menaka just like rang her ankle bells. And Viswamitra, he just immediately said, "When's the wedding?" You know, they had the, anyway, Gandharva wedding. They just exchanged garlands. That's a nice type of wedding. No need of this 3-day stuff or, you know, wedding rings or anything like that. So anyway, so then he got deviated from his yoga practices, austerities. And then later on, Indra also sent Rumba. And this time he didn't give in to her, but he gave in to his anger. And he cursed her and she became like a stone for like 100 years. So in this way, Indra's trying to interfere. But anyway, in the case of sacrifices, you know, 100 horse sacrifices get you to the heavenly planets. So if you want to go to the heavenly planets, that's how you can go and become Indra. You have the story of Maharaj Prithu, who was performing, he got to 99. Then he was getting ready for the 100th horse sacrifice. And Indra came and kept stealing the horses. And Indra, the Maharaj Prithu's son, Vijitashva, kept trying to get the horses back, but Indra kept assuming different forms of sannyasis. Came up with a lot of bogus sannyasis like we have now in Kali Yuga. Some sannyasis, you know, had skulls and crossbones or something like that. Other sannyasis were naked. Other sannyasis were covered with ashes like the Naga Babas. Anyone ever seen a Naga Baba? You see a Naga Baba? Naga Baba. Naga means snake. Baba means like a saintly person, a good guy. Baba. Oh my God. During the 60s, there was this, anyway, I won't say, there was this musician by the name Baba Freejohn or something like that. Anyway, you probably remember him. Anyway, so Baba, so they have these Naga Babas and all sorts of bogus sannyasis who run around India today. And Indra came, he was the founder Acharya, for inventing all these different bogus sannyasis. Prabhupada mentions that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Indra kept trying to steal these horses. So Indra has a lot of problems there, you know. You'd think, you know, he has the heavenly planets, he has all these dancing girls, and he'd be satisfied. But that's the problem with fruitive activities. You're never satisfied. And then what happens if somehow or other your desire for fruitive gain gets frustrated? You get angry. Of course, the typical example given in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the example of Indra getting angry at the residents of Vrindavan. I mean, talk about being an aparadi. That's a maha aparad. When, of course, we know the story, but I can tell it again very quickly. The residents of Vrindavan were getting ready to perform Indra Puja. Indra Puja is done, it's like a harvest festival. Practically every culture, they have a harvest festival, right? In the culture that I was born in, it was called Sukkot. That means it's a harvest festival. The Jewish people used to have that. They erect tents and they would worship the demigods. They'd actually worship the demigods. Later on it became God, but you know, anyway. So you find this, and the American Indians too, they have a culture like that, a harvest festival, like that practically all around the world. So they were getting ready for this harvest festival to worship Indra, and Krishna just happened to come out. And actually, this is very much applicable to the topic of this verse and purport. Krishna came out and he just asked his father, you know, what kind of sacrifice are you doing? And his father, Nanda Maharaj, thought, you know, how's this little boy going to understand these things, you know? Just be peaceful, kid. And Krishna said, you know, those who are liberal don't have any secrets. You know, because he thought his father was keeping a secret from him. But his father was just thinking, you're not capable of understanding. Imagine telling God you're not capable of understanding something. I can understand things better than you can. So he was advising Krishna. And Krishna says, you know, those who are liberal don't have any secrets. What kind of sacrifice is this? Traditional? You know, what is the meaning of this? And the father explained that rain comes from Indra. If you don't please Indra, you get too much rain, you get no rain, and then you don't get any harvest. You understand? Without rain, there's no harvest. No, without water, there's no harvest. So Krishna at that point began to criticize the Karmakanda practices. He said, look, even if Indra does exist, and we're not sure if he does, then he has to give you the results because that's the law of the universe. Just like we would say, you know, even if the driver license examiner does exist, he does exist, he has to give you a license if you pass the test. I mean, he doesn't have the discretion, does he? I mean, maybe in North Carolina he does, but anyway, he doesn't have the discretion. I don't like the way you look. Can you imagine that? You go in the driver's license at, you know, North Carolina Department of Motor Vehicles, and the license examiner says, well, you did all right in the test, but you're ugly, and you can't get a license. Or I don't like you, you know. You know, obviously, you know, what you do is you call the police or something on the guy. So he has to do his duty. So Krishna was saying that about the demigods. They have to do their duty. In fact, that's true. They do have to do their duty. But Krishna was presenting it in terms of the Karma Kandya philosophy, the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, where everybody is controlled by, you know, just activity. Karma is everything. Even God. I mean, that's a Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Even states that even God, if he's there, is subordinate to activities and karma. Everything, in other words, everything's just action and reaction, like Newtonian physics, like that. So Nanda Maharaj was thinking, that's a cute statement that little boy just made. He didn't take him seriously at first. You know, just like if your little kid says, you know, why worship Indra? You say, oh, he's such a cute little boy. Look at my little boy, he made a cute statement. So, but then Krishna was very persuasive, and he persuaded Nanda Maharaj to stop. And he said, look, and this cute little boy, Krishna, said, look, actually, you know, this Indra, you know, who knows if he exists or not. And anyway, even if he exists, he has to give the results of his activities that you perform. If you're pious, don't worry about him. Actually, let's be more practical. You know, the grass is coming from Govardhan. It's not coming from Indra. Govardhan's right here on earth. You can see it, you know. Grass is coming. Our cows are grazing. Because nowadays it's so dry that you can't graze a cow in Govardhan, except during the rainy season. So he said that. And then the logic, of course, for a little boy, that's quite logical, isn't it? Because, you know, if you see it, it's real. And if you don't see it, it's not real. So Krishna was presenting empirical philosophy there. That actually, actually, you know, grass is coming from Govardhan, not from some stupid guy up there. And so he was convinced. Nanda Maharaj somehow or other was convinced. The reason he was convinced was that, not because so much of the logic of it, is because Krishna was so beautiful, so attractive. You know, there, it really wasn't like logical what Krishna was presenting, karma, mimamsa, philosophy, but Krishna was so beautiful that, you know, just like if there's a man and woman in love, the woman could say something. And, well, let's give an example. Mohini Murti. She was so beautiful that she said to the demons, let me divide this nectar up fairly. And the demons didn't use logic or reason at that point. They just thought, because she's so beautiful, she'll be fair. I mean, is that logical? Huh? You know, it's definitely not logical if someone's handsome, you know, like Rock Hudson, of course he's dead. But anyway, so if some handsome guy walks in and then the lady trusts him because just because he's handsome or some beautiful woman walks in, you trust her. I mean, it's crazy. Like people trusted Kennedy, for example, because he was so handsome and debonair. That's why he won the election. And you know, anyway, and Nixon was ugly. You know, so imagine, people don't think logically like that. So in the spiritual realm, you know, Nanda Maharaj was actually just like enamored. Wow, Krishna's so beautiful, he says this. Let's try it. And so they tried it, and as a result, Indra got angry. And when Indra got angry, you know, he tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan because he was frustrated. His desire, or his desires for, prestige, appreciation, were frustrated, and therefore he got angry and he tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. So, anyway. So that's one example of a fruit of activities. But if you worship Krishna, he takes care of the results. And Krishna, in fact, says that in the Bhagavad Gita. This is a very interesting verse in the 8th chapter, text 28 of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, actually I can read this because it's interesting, because it's a very interesting verse in this regard. 8:28. Give me one second. Krishna says, a person who accepts, hey, the Sanskrit's missing from this verse. Anyway, a person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end he reaches the supreme abode. That's interesting, isn't it? So if we perform devotional service, we don't have to worry about any of these fruitive activities. And the Bhagavad Gita, in fact, has so many verses that decry fruitive activities. Of course, fruitive activities in this sense, just to reiterate, mean the karmakandi activities, not just activities that you perform for some fruit. You understand? It means, in the context of Prabhupada's statement here in this verse, this purport, and the Bhagavad Gita, it means karmakandi activities, the worship of the demigods. And in many places in the Gita, Krishna talks about that. I mean, there must be at least 100 places in the Gita where Krishna talks about this, or Prabhupada comments about it in his purports. I mean, the second chapter, for example, there's many statements about this fruitive activity, like Krishna says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nich Trigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvandvo Nitrasatvasto Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavan. He says to Arjuna, don't be concerned with the Vedas because they're mainly concerned with the three modes of material nature. But rise above these things, be established in the self. Famous verse like that. But in the third chapter, actually, Krishna says something very interesting. Third chapter, text 26 of the Gita, he says, if we find people, I'm paraphrasing, if we find people who are attached to fruitive activities, he said, don't disturb their minds, which is really interesting. In other words, this is actually a preaching verse telling us how to preach, because people in this world are attached to fruitive activities. And if you go to you know, the Hindu center, they're really attached to, you know, fruitive activities. Especially they want to go to Swarga or heaven. So Krishna in the third chapter, text 26, says, don't disturb their minds. In other words, what does disturbing their minds mean? That means you would go in and say, this is nonsense. I used to do that. Anyway, I remember in Charlotte, every time I went to Charlotte to speak at the Hindu center, Thakur Bhai, Topi Wala, used to say, Maharaj, don't say this, don't say this, and don't say that. He gave me a whole list of things not to say. He said, first of all, don't tell them, you know, worship of the demigods is a vidipurvakam, not the proper process. Don't tell them, don't use that verse, yastu nirayanam devam brahma rudradi daivata samitvayaneva viksheta sapashandi bhavetruvam, that one who thinks that the demigods are equal to Narayana is an atheist. Don't use that verse. You know, he gave me a whole list of things, that, and I would say them anyway. Anyway, so he would get nervous, you know, when I would speak at the Hindu center. I don't know if any of you remember that in the early days, because I would always be in my shooting mood, you know, teach him a lesson mood. Anyway, now I've employed a different strategy. So, but Krishna, but going along with what Krishna says in the Gita, in the third chapter, he says, don't disturb their minds. In other words, if they're attached to fruitive activities, don't, you know, tell them it's nonsense. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, it's interesting, Krishna does tell them it's nonsense. But anyway, that is interesting. Anyway, so he says, don't tell them it's nonsense, but encourage them to work in a spirit of devotion. In other words, you add devotion to it. And so there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that actually illustrates this point. Akama, sarvakama, mokshakama, daradi, tivrena, bhakti, yogeni, yajeta, purusham, param. It says, what we need to tell these people is, we don't tell them your nonsense, or what you're doing is nonsense. We tell them, look, where's everything coming from? No, who's the source? You know, why approach just some man in the street when you can approach Bill Gates? You understand? You know, one man in the street may have hundreds of dollars. Bill Gates has billions of dollars. So why approach a demigod? He has a little bit when Krishna has everything. So then you... So you recite this verse, akama, whether one is free of desires, full of desires, or desirous of liberation, to brain about you, then worship Krishna enthusiastically and you'll get what you want. Wow. And this other verse that we recited, that one who performs devotional service is not bereft of the results of fruitive activity, yogic performances, etc., etc. So you can recite these verses and encourage people in a spirit of devotion. Not towards Indra. That's not the point, you know. Oh, it's nice you work. Of course, nowadays nobody worships Indra, so, in America at least. They're generally worshiping, what, Durga, Ganesh, who else? Shiva, sometimes Mahavir too. Hanuman, well, Hanuman's great, you know, let him worship Hanuman. Lakshman? That would be nice. Anyway, so, just encourage them to worship the demigods. And then even Hanuman should not be worshipped with a fruitive intention. But say, go to the boss. You know, he'll give you everything. Wow. Chant Hare Krishna and your life will become perfect. You'll become happy. Just like, I mean, just like I was presenting this, there's a video on the internet, I don't know if any of you have seen, posted to my Facebook page, where this famous soccer player, you know, sports personality came to the temple in New Zealand. You saw it? You saw the video. And I was explaining to him. I said, just look, people are becoming happier. Because actually what people want is happiness. I mean, if we really do some facilitation, why do people want the results of fruitive activity? Become happy. Really, they're trying to become happy. That's all. You know, why do they want a Mercedes? To become happy. Why do they want what does a woman want? A diamond ring. I know she has a need for appreciation. It's cheaper appreciation than that, you know. Save money, you know. Give your diamonds to the sannyasis. Anyway, so So why? We used to have people used to join the movement. I asked for their jewelry so I could sell it and give it to Krishna. Anyway, so why do people want any of these things? Ultimately, they want to be happy, right? So what I presented to this particular sports personality, it's very famous in New Zealand, it was on the main TV station. I said, look at the people, they're happy here. Try it, you'll be happy. You know, Prabhupada also would say sometimes we're changing hippies into happies. So, or judge by the results, et cetera, et cetera. So we can present like that. Yeah, you want to be happy, here's how you can be happy. Krishna consciousness is practically a system of recreation, Prabhupada would say. So many things like that. So in this way, we can encourage people to work for the goal that they have in mind, but in a spirit of devotion for Krishna. That's preaching. Yes. Or like Prabhupada said, do what you're doing, but do it for Krishna. Isn't it? Do what you're doing, do it for Krishna. Anyway, so getting back to the point, Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, I just was looking through Bhagavad Gita last night to see how many verses, and it was amazing how many verses dealt with this. Bhagavad Gita also says, by fruit of activity you get a quick result. But it also says a yogi doesn't engage in fruitive activities. And also, finally, the atheists, people who are atheistic can't get results from fruitive activities either. In the ninth chapter, Krishna speaks about that. Anyway, so these are some points about fruitive activities, sacrifices, and how we preach to people and encourage people in Krishna consciousness. So any questions or comments about any of these points? What? What?
I was wondering if you could maybe say a few things about
committing
offenses.
Oh, yeah. Prabhupada talked about that. Well, that was obvious. Prabhupada said that, and this injunction has been given by all of our acharyas, that krodha bhakti dveshi janae, that anger can be a great quality when directed against a person who is envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee. So, and if one doesn't get angry, then your bhakti lata bij can be damaged severely. If you hear an offense and you don't do something about it, like get out of the place, you know, run away, defeat the person. Of course, other means that are prescribed in the Vedas we don't use, like we don't cut people's tongues out. You know, you're not supposed to literally cut someone's tongue out. That's crazy. You know, you don't go around with a scissors, you know, or a knife. But you're supposed to react somehow or other, at least leave the situation if someone is blasphemed. Because it's so painful. It actually affects the heart. Just like if you love someone, if you really love someone and they're criticized, it affects your heart. It goes right to your heart. Like if you love your child, your son, your daughter, or anyone, or your husband or your wife, and someone says, you know, they're ugly, it goes right to your heart. Like if I said something about Parijata, isn't it? If I said, you know, anyway, I'm not going to say anything about Parijata. But if I said something negative about her, I mean, Parijata is a nice devotee. But if I said something, you know, obviously she's not ugly, but if I said that, you say, ooh, it would be just like someone piercing your heart with a knife, right? Because there's so much love there, isn't it? So it's the same thing. When you hear something stated about Krishna or a devotee, there should be so much love that it's like piercing the heart, that you're actually forced to do something about it. I mean, if you don't get angry, it's a disqualification. It means you don't love the person. It means you basically don't want to love the person. And Krishna sees that, and then you get a reaction. So we should get angry, but no physical stuff, please. You know, no fighting, cutting tongues out, or you can throw prasadam if you want.
Uh-oh.
That's nice, because then give some person something to eat. But no physical stuff, please. I mean, I know Prabhupada would say things sometimes like smash their faces and things like that. But we don't do those things. That's speaking euphemistically, metaphorically, you know, allegorically, whatever, we don't actually harm someone. But if we can defeat someone philosophically, then we can do that. Okay. All right. All glory.